And for what? A mortal woman you can never be with? One who is married to another man? Lila knew it wasn't true. Macon hadn't made his choice solely because of her, but she knew she was part of the reason. She faced Abraham, mustering all the courage she possessed. We're going to find a way to end all that. Casters and mortals should be able to do more than just coexist. Abraham's expression changed. His face darkened, and he no longer looked like an aging southern gentleman. He looked sinister and evil as he smiled at Macon. Your father and Hunting? We hoped he would join us. I warned Hunting that brothers are often a disappointment. As are sons. Macon turned his head sharply, his face changing to mirror Abraham's. I am no one's son. At any rate, I can't have you or this woman interfering with our plans. It's unfortunate, really. You turned your back on your family because you loved this filthy mortal. And yet she will die because you dragged her into this. Abraham vanished, materializing in front of Lila. Oh, well. He opened his mouth, baring his gleaming canines. Lila covered her head with her arms and screamed, waiting for the bite that never came. Macon materialized between them. Lila felt the weight of his body as it slammed into hers, throwing her backward. Lila, run! For a second she was paralyzed as the two of them thrashed at each other. The sound was violent, as if the earth was tearing itself apart. Lila watched as Macon threw Abraham to the ground, his guttural cries ripping through the air. Then she ran. The sky swirled around me slowly, like someone hit rewind. Liv must have been talking to me, because I could see her mouth forming words, but I couldn't make them out. I closed my eyes again. Abraham had killed my mother. She may have died by Seraphine's hand, but it was Abraham who ordered it. I was sure of it. Ethan, can you hear me? Liv's voice was frantic. I'm okay. I pushed myself up slowly. All three of them were staring down at me, and Lucille was sitting on my chest. I was sprawled out on the rotting walkway. Give it to me. Liv was trying to pry the arc light out of my hands. It's acting as some kind of metaphysical channel. You can't control it. I didn't let go. It was a channel I couldn't afford to close. At least tell me what happened. Who was it now? Abraham or Seraphine? Liv put her hand on my shoulder to steady me. It's fine. I don't want to talk about it. Link stared down at me. You okay, man? I blinked a few times. It was as if I was underwater, watching them through ripples. I'm fine. Ridley stood up a few feet away, wiping her hands on her skirt. Famous last words. Liv picked up her backpack and stood staring at the end of the almost endless dock. I pulled myself up next to her. This is it. I looked at Liv. I can feel it. I shivered. That's when I noticed she was shaking too. June 20th. Sea change. It felt like we had been walking forever, as if the bridge in front of us only got longer the closer we got. The farther we went, the less we saw. The air became brighter and heavier and wetter, until suddenly my feet came to the edge of the weathered planks, and what appeared to be an impenetrable wall of fog. "Is this the Great Barrier?" I squatted down, touching the place where the wood ended.
My hand felt nothing. No invisible caster stairwell. Nothing.
Wait, what if this is like a dangerous force field or some kind of poisonous smoke?
Link pulled out his shears and gently pushed them into the mist, then yanked them back, perfectly intact.
Or maybe not. Still, pretty creepy. How do we know if we go through that, we're going to be able to come back?
As usual, Link was only saying what the rest of us were thinking. I stood at the end of the bridge, facing the nothingness. I'm going through. Liv looked insulted.
You can barely walk. Why you?
Because this whole thing is my fault? Because Lena was my girlfriend? Because I might be a wayward, whatever that is? I looked away and found myself looking at Lucille, her claws digging into Ridley's shirt. Lucille Ball was no fan of the water.
Ouch!
Ridley put her down.
Stupid cat!
Lucille took a few deliberate steps across the wood, turning to look at me. She cocked her head. With a flick of her tail, she took off and was gone.
Because.
Turns out, I couldn't explain. Liv shook her head, and without waiting for anyone else, I followed Lucille into the clouds. I was in the Great Barrier, between universes, and for one second, I didn't feel like a caster or a mortal. All I felt was magic. I could feel it and hear it and smell it, the air thick with sound and salt and water. The shore at the end of the bridge was pulling at me, and I was overwhelmed with an unbearable sense of longing. I wanted to be there with Lena. More than that, I just wanted to be there. I didn't seem to have a reason or logic for it, apart from the intensity of the longing itself. I wanted to be there more than anything else. I didn't want to choose one world. I wanted to be part of both. I didn't want to see only one side of the sky. I wanted to see it all. I hesitated. Then I took a single step and walked out of the fog and into the unknown.
June 20th. Out of the light. Cold air hit me, sending goosebumps up my arms. By the time I opened my eyes, the brightness and the fog had disappeared. All I could see was a blur of moonlight pouring into a hole in the jagged cave in the distance. The full moon was clear and luminous. I wondered if I was looking at the 17th moon. I closed my eyes and tried to experience the intense rush I'd felt the moment before when I was between worlds. It was there, behind everything else. The feeling, the electricity of the air, as if this side of the world was full of life I couldn't see, but could sense all around me.
Come on!
Ridley was behind me, pulling Link, whose eyes were squeezed shut. Ridley let go of his hand.
You can open your eyes now, Super Stud.
Liv appeared after them, breathless.
That was brilliant.
She came up beside me, barely a golden hair loose from her braids. She watched the waves crash against the rocks in front of us, her eyes sparkling.
Do you think we're...
I answered before she had a chance to finish.
We've crossed into the Great Barrier.
Which meant Lena was here somewhere. And so was Seraphine. And who knows what else. Lucille was sitting on a rock, casually licking her paw. I saw something next to her, snagged between two rocks. It was Lena's necklace.
She's here.
I bent down to pick it up, my hand shaking uncontrollably. I had never seen her without it, not once. The silver button was shining through the sand, the wire star caught in the loop where she had wrapped the red string. These weren't just her memories. They were our memories, everything we had shared since we met, the evidence of every happy moment she'd ever experienced in her life, tossed aside like all the other lost bits of broken shells and tangled seaweed that washed up on the beach. If it was some kind of sign, it wasn't good. Did you find something, Short Straw? Reluctantly, I opened my hand and held it out for them to see. Ridley gasped. Liv didn't recognize the necklace. What is it? Link looked at the ground. It's Lena's necklace. Maybe she lost it, Liv said innocently. No, Ridley's voice was rising. Lena never took it off, not once in her whole life. She couldn't have lost it. She would have noticed the second it slipped off. Liv shrugged. Maybe she noticed. Maybe she didn't care. Ridley lunged at Liv, Link holding her back by her waist. Don't say that. You don't know anything. Tell her, Short Straw. But even I didn't know anymore. As we picked our way along the shore, we approached a rocky line of uneven coastal caves. Tidewater pooled in their sandy floors, and jagged rock walls kept everything in shadow. The pathway between the rocks seemed to be leading us toward a particular cave. The ocean crashed around us, and I felt like it could wash us away in a second. There was real power here. The rock was humming under my feet, and even the light of the moon seemed alive with it. I jumped from one rock to the next until I was high enough to see past the rocky outcroppings of the coastal caves. The others climbed after me, trying to keep up. There! I pointed at a large cavern just beyond the caves surrounding us. The moon was shining directly above it, illuminating an enormous jagged crack in the ceiling. And something else. In the moonlight, I could barely make out figures moving in the shadows. Hunting's blood pack. There was no mistaking them. No one said anything. This wasn't a mystery to solve anymore. It was quickly becoming reality. It was a cave most likely filled with dark casters, blood incubuses, and a cataclyst. All we had was each other and the arc light. The realization hit Link hard. Face it, the four of us are dead. He looked down at Lucille, who was licking her paws. With one dead cat. He had a point. From what we could see, there was only one way in or out. The entrance to the cave was heavily guarded, and what waited inside was likely to be an even more formidable threat. He's right, Ethan. My uncle's probably in there with his boys. Without my powers, we're not going to survive the blood pack again. We're useless mortals. All we had going for us was that stupid shiny stone. Ridley kicked at the wet sand, as hopeless as ever. Not useless, Rid, Link sighed. Just mortals. You'll get used to it. Shoot me if I do. Liv stared out at the sea. Maybe this is as far as we can go. Even if we could get past the blood pack, to take on Seraphine would be... Liv didn't finish, but we all knew what she was thinking. A death wish. Insanity. Suicide. I looked out into the wind, the darkness, and the night. Where are you, El? I could see the moonlight pouring into the cave. Lena was out there somewhere, waiting for me. She didn't answer, but that didn't stop me from reaching for her. I'm coming. Maybe Liv's right, and we should think about going back, getting some help. I noticed Link's breathing was labored. He had been trying to hide it, but he was still in pain. I had to own up to what I was doing to my friends, the people who cared about me. We can't go back. I mean, I can't. The 17th moon wasn't going to wait, and Lena was running out of time. The arc light brought me here for a reason. I thought about what Marion said at my mother's grave when she gave it to me. In light there is dark, and in dark there is light. It was something my mom used to say. I pulled the arc light out of my pocket. It was turning a brilliant green, incredibly bright. Something was happening. As I turned it over and over in my hands, I remembered everything. It was all there, looking back at me from the surface of the stone. Sketches of Ravenwood and Macon's family tree spread across my mother's table in the archive. I stared at the arc light, seeing things for the first time. As I did, images rose to the surface of my mind and the stone. Marion handing me my mother's most treasured possession, standing between the graves of two people who finally found a way to be together. Maybe Ridley was right. All we had going for us was this stupid, shiny stone. Then a ring, twisting on a finger. Mortals alone were no match for dark power. A picture of my mother in the shadows. Could the answer have been in my pocket all along? And a pair of black eyes that reflected back my own. We weren't alone. We never were. The visions had laid it all out for me from the beginning. The images vanished as suddenly as they had appeared, replaced by words the second I thought them. In the Ark there is power, and in the power there is night. The Ark light. It's not what we thought. My voice echoed off the rock walls surrounding us. Liv was surprised. What are you talking about? It's not a compass. It never was. I held it up so they could all see. As we watched, the arc light shone brighter and brighter until it was eclipsed in a perfect circle of light, like a tiny star. I could no longer see the stone within the light. What is it doing? Liv breathed. The arc light, which I took so innocently from Marion at my mother's grave, wasn't an object of power, not for me. It was for Macon. I held the arc light up higher. In the iridescent moonlight of the shallow tidal cave, the dark water around my feet glittered. Even the tiniest flecks of quartz studded in the rock walls caught the light. In the darkness, the sphere seemed to ignite. I could see the glow of the round, pearlized surface revealing the swirling colors of a hidden interior. Violet churned into somber greens, then burst into vibrant yellows, which deepened into oranges and reds. In that second, I understood. I wasn't a keeper, or a caster, or a seer. I wasn't like Marion or my mother. It wasn't for me to keep the lore and the history, or protect the books and the secrets that made up so much of the caster world. I wasn't like Liv, charting the uncharted, measuring the immeasurable. I wasn't Amma. It wasn't for me to see what no one else could, or to communicate with the greats. More than anything, I was nothing like Lena. I couldn't eclipse the moon, bring down the skies, or kick up the earth. I could never convince anyone to jump off a bridge like Ridley could, and I was nothing like Macon. In the back of my mind, I had been searching for how I fit into the story, my story with Lena, hoping I could fit into it at all. But my story had found its way to me through all of them. Now, at the end of what seemed like a lifetime in the darkness and confusion of the tunnels, I knew what to do. I knew my part. Marion was right. I was the wayward. It was my job to find what was lost. Who was lost? I rolled the arc light to my fingertips and released it. The stone hung in the air.
What the...
Link staggered closer. I pulled the folded yellowed page out of my back pocket, the one I had ripped from my mother's journal and carried all this way without a reason, or so I thought. The arc light cast a silver light around the cave as it hovered. I stepped closer to it and held up the paper so I could speak the cast from the page of my mother's journal, even though it was in Latin. I pronounced the words carefully.
In Luce
Kai kai caligines sunt, et in caliginibus lux, in arcu imperium est, et in imperio nox.
Of course, Liv whispered, moving closer to the light. The cost, ob lucem libertas, freedom in light.
Liv looked at me.
Finish it.
I turned the paper over. There was nothing on the other side.
That's all there is.
Liv's eyes widened.
You can't leave it undone. It's incredibly dangerous. The power of an arc light, let alone a Ravenwood arc light, it could kill us. It could kill...
You have to do it.
I can't, Ethan. You know I can't.
Liv, Lena's going to die. You, me, Link, Ridley, we all are. We've come as far as mortals can go. We can't do the rest alone. I put my hand on her shoulder.
Ethan.
She whispered my name, just my name. But I heard the words she couldn't say almost as clearly as I heard Lena's voice when we kelted. Liv and I had a connection all our own. It wasn't magic. It was something very human and very real. Liv might not like what had unfolded between us, but she understood it. She understood me, and a part of me believed she always would. I wished things could have been different, that Liv could have everything she wanted at the end of all this. The things that had nothing to do with lost stars and caster skies. But Liv wasn't where my road was taking me. She was part of the path itself. She looked past me to the arc light, still glowing in front of us. Her silhouette was framed in light so bright it looked like she was standing in front of the sun. She reached for the arc light, and I remembered my dream, the dream of Lena reaching out to me from the darkness. Two girls who were as different as the sun and the moon. Without one, I could never have found my way back to the other. In light there is dark, and in dark there is light. Liv touched the arc light with a single finger and began to speak.
In illo qui vinctus est, libertas pate facietur, spirate de nuo caligines, e luce exae.
She was crying, watching the ball of light as tears streaked down the sides of her face. She forced out every word, as if they were being etched into her. But she didn't stop.
In the one who is bound, freedom will be found. Live again, darkness. Come out of the light.
Liv's voice faltered. She closed her eyes and spoke the final words slowly into the night between us.
Come out. Come.
The words broke off. She held her hand out to me, and I took it. Link limped over to us, and Ridley clutched his arm on the other side. Liv's entire body was shaking. With every word, she was falling farther from her sacred duty and her dream. She had taken a side. She had cast herself into the story that was only hers to keep. When this was over, if we survived, Liv would no longer be a keeper in training. Her sacrifice was her gift, the one thing that gave her life meaning. I couldn't imagine how that would feel. We became four voices. There was no turning back. E luce exae. Come out of the light. The blast was so cataclysmic, the rock beneath my feet shot into the wall behind me. All four of us were thrown to the ground. I could taste the wet sand and the salt water in my mouth, but I knew. My mom had tried to tell me, but I hadn't been able to hear. In the cave, framed by rock and moss and sea and sand, was a being made of nothing more than a mist of shadow and light. At first, I could see the rocks behind it, as if it was an apparition. The water washed through it, and it didn't touch the ground.
Then the light stretched into a shape, the shape into a form, the form into a man. His hands became hands, his body became a body, and his face, a face. Macon's face. I heard my mother's words. He's with you now. Macon opened his eyes and looked at me. Only you can redeem him. He was dressed in the burnt clothes from the night he died. Only something was different. His eyes were green. Castor green. It's good to see you, Mr. Waite. June 20th. Flesh and blood. Macon! It was all I could do not to fling my arms around him. He, on the other hand, looked at me calmly, brushing off some of the burnt grit from his dinner jacket. His eyes were unsettling. I was used to the glassy black eyes of Macon Ravenwood the Incubus, the eyes that regarded you with nothing but your own reflection. Now he was standing in front of me, as green-eyed as any light caster. Ridley stared, but didn't utter a sound. It wasn't often you saw Ridley speechless. Much obliged, Mr. Waite. Much obliged. Macon rolled his neck back and forth, uncoiling his arms as if he was waking up from a long nap. I bent down and picked up the arc light, lying in the sandy dirt. I was right. You were in the arc light all along. I thought about how many times I'd held it in my hand and relied on it to guide me, how familiar the warmth of the stone had felt. Link was having trouble coming to grips with the idea that Macon was alive, too. Without thinking, he reached out to touch him. Macon's hand flew up and grabbed Link's arm. Link flinched. So sorry, Mr. Lincoln. I'm afraid my reflexes are a bit... reflexive? I haven't gotten out much lately. Link rubbed his arm. You didn't have to do that, Mr. Ravenwood. I just wanted, you know, I thought you were... What? A shear? A vex, perhaps? Link shivered. You tell me, sir. Macon extended his arm. Go ahead, then. Be my guest. Link stuck out his hand, tentatively, as if he was about to hold it over a candle on a birthday dare. His finger came within a millimeter of Macon's ragged jacket, and stopped. Macon sighed, rolling his eyes, and tapped Link's hand against his chest. See? Flesh and blood. Something we have in common now, Mr. Lincoln. Uncle Macon? Ridley crept up to him, finally ready to face him. Is it really you? He looked deep into her blue eyes. You've lost your powers. She nodded, her eyes brimming with tears. So have you. Some of them, yes, but I suspect I've gained others. He reached for her hand, but she pulled away. It's impossible to tell. I'm still in the midst of it. He smiled. Sort of like being a teenager. Twice. But your eyes are green. Macon shook his head, flexing his hands. True. My life as an incubus is over, but the transition is not complete. Although my eyes are those of a light caster, I can still feel darkness within me. It has not been fully exorcised yet. I'm not transitioning. I'm nothing. A mortal. She said the word like it was a curse, and the sadness in her voice was real. I don't have a place in the order of things anymore. You're alive. I don't feel like myself. I'm powerless. Macon weighed this in his mind as if he was trying to determine her present state as much as she was. You may be in the midst of a transition of your own, unless this is one of my sister's more impressive tricks. Ridley's eyes lit up. Does that mean my powers might come back? Macon studied her blue eyes. I think Seraphine is too cruel for that. I only meant that you might not be fully mortal yet. Darkness does not leave us as easily as we would hope. Macon pulled her awkwardly to his chest, and she buried her face in his jacket like a 12-year-old. It's not easy to be light when you've been dark. It's almost too much to ask of anyone. I tried to quiet the torrent of questions racing through my mind and settled for the first. How? Macon turned from Ridley, his green eyes burning into me with their newfound light. Could you be more specific, Mr. Waite? How am I not resting in 27,000 distinct fragments of ash in an urn within the Ravenwood family vault? How am I not rotting under a lemon tree in the sodden prestige of his garden of perpetual peace? How did I come to find myself imprisoned in a small crystalline ball in your grimy pocket? 2, I said without thinking. I beg your pardon? There are 2 lemon trees over your grave. How very generous. 1 would have sufficed. Macon smiled tiredly, which was pretty remarkable, considering he'd spent 4 months in a supernatural prison the size of an egg. Or are you perhaps wondering how is it that I died and you lived? Because I have to tell you, as far as hows go, that's a story your neighbors on Cotton Bend would be talking about for a lifetime. Except you didn't, sir. Die, I mean. You are correct, Mr. Waite. I am, and have always been, very much alive, in a manner of speaking. Liv stepped forward tentatively. Even though she would probably never become a keeper now, there was still a keeper inside her, seeking answers. Mr. Ravenwood, may I ask you a question, sir? Macon tilted his head slightly. Who might you be, dear? I imagine it was your voice I heard calling me from the arc light. Liv blushed. It was, sir. My name is Olivia Durand, and I was training with Professor Ashcroft. Before... Her voice dwindled. Before you cast the Ob Lucem Libertas? Liv nodded, ashamed. Macon looked pained, then smiled at her. Then you gave up a great deal to save me, Miss Olivia Durand. I am in your debt, and as I always repay my debts, I would be honored to answer a question, at the very least. Even after being trapped all those months, Macon was still a gentleman. Obviously, I know how you got out of the arc light, but how did you get in? It's impossible for an incubus to imprison himself, especially when, by all accounts, you were dead. Liv was right. He couldn't have done it alone. Someone had to have helped him, and the minute the ball released him, I knew who it was. It was the one person we both loved as much as Lena, even in death. My mother, who had loved books and old things, nonconformity and history and complexity, who had loved Macon so much she walked away when he asked her to, even though she couldn't bear to leave him, even though a part of her never had. It was her, wasn't it? Macon nodded. Your mother was the only one who knew about the arc light. I gave it to her. Any incubus would have killed her to destroy it. It was our secret, one of our last. Did you see her? I looked out at the sea, blinking hard. Macon's expression changed. I could see the pain in his face. Yes.
Did she seem... what? Happy? Dead? Herself? Beautiful as ever, your mother. Beautiful as the day she left us. I saw her too. I thought about Bonaventure Cemetery and felt the familiar knot in my throat. But how is that possible? Liv wasn't trying to challenge him, but she didn't understand. None of us did. Macon's face was full of grief. It wasn't any easier for him to talk about my mom than it was for me. I think you'll find the impossible is possible more often than we think, particularly in the Castor world. But if you would care to take one last trip with me, I can show you. He opened his hand to me, offering Liv the other. Ridley stepped forward and closed her hand around mine, and hesitantly, Link limped over, completing the circle. Macon looked over at me, and before I could read his expression, the air was filled with smoke.
Macon tried to hold on, but he was blacking out. He could see the ebony sky above him, streaked with orange flames. He couldn't see Hunting as he fed, but he could feel his brother's teeth in his shoulder. When Hunting had his fill, he let Macon's body drop to the ground. When Macon opened his eyes again, Lena's grandmother, Emmeline, was kneeling over him. He could feel the heat of her healing power as it coursed through his body. Ethan was there, too. Macon tried to speak, but he didn't know if they could hear him. Find Lena. That's what he wanted to say. Ethan must have heard him because he took off into the smoke and fire. The boy was so much like Amari, so stubborn and fearless. He was so much like his mother, loyal and honest, and bound for the heartbreak that came from loving a Castor. Macon was still thinking about Jane when his mind faded. When Macon opened his eyes again, the fire was gone. The smoke, the roaring sound of flames and ammunition, it was all gone. He felt himself drifting in the darkness. It wasn't like traveling. This void had weight. It was pulling him through. Yet when he reached out, he could see that his hand was hazy, only partially materialized. He was dead. Lena must have made the choice. She had chosen to go light, even in the darkness, knowing the fate of an incubus in the other world. A sense of calm washed over him. It was finished. Not yet. Not for you. Macon turned, recognizing her voice immediately. Lila Jane. She was luminous in the abyss, shimmering and beautiful. Janie. There's so much I have to tell you. Jane shook her head, her brown hair falling over her shoulder. There's no time. There's nothing but time. Jane stretched out her hand, her fingers glimmering. Take my hand. As soon as Macon touched her, the darkness began to bleed into colors and light. He could see images, familiar shapes and forms swimming around him, but he couldn't anchor them. Then he realized where they were. The archive, Jane's special place. Jane, what's happening? He saw her reach out, but everything was blurry and unclear. Then he heard the words he had taught her. In these walls with no time or space, I bind your body and from this earth erase. There was something in her hand. The arc light. Jane, don't do it. I want to be here with you. She was floating before him, already beginning to fade. I promised if the time came, I would use it. I'm keeping my promise. You can't die. They need you. She was gone now. A voice, nothing else. My son needs you. Macon tried to tell her everything he had failed to say in life, but it was too late. He could feel the pull of the arc light already, impossible to break.
As he spun into the abyss, he heard her seal his fate. Comprehende, liga, cruca fige. Capture, cage, and crucify.
Macon dropped my hand, and the vision released us. I held it in my mind, unable to let her go. My mom had saved him, using the weapon Macon had given her to use against him. She had given up the chance for them to finally be together because of me. Had she known he was our only chance? When I opened my eyes, Liv was crying, and Ridley was trying to pretend she wasn't. Oh, please, enough with the drama. A tear leaked onto her cheek. Liv wiped her eyes, sniffling. I had no idea Ashia was capable of anything like that.
You would be surprised what we are capable of when the situation warrants it.
Macon clapped his hand on my shoulder.
Isn't that right, Mr. Waite?
I knew he was trying to thank me, but as I looked around our broken circle, I didn't feel like I deserved thanks. Ridley had lost her powers, Link was wincing in pain, and Liv had destroyed her future. I didn't do anything. Macon's hand tightened on my shoulder, forcing me to face him.
You made yourself see what most would have overlooked. You brought me here. You brought me back. You accepted your fate as a wayward and found the way here. None of that could have been easy.
He looked around the cave at Ridley, Link, and Liv. His eyes lingered a moment on Liv, and then his eyes locked on mine.
For anyone, including Lena.
I almost couldn't stand to tell him, but I wasn't sure if he knew.
Lena thinks she killed you.
Macon didn't speak for a second, but when he did, his voice was even and controlled.
Why would she think that?
Seraphine stabbed me that night, but you died. Amma told me, but Lena can't forgive herself, and it's changed her. I wasn't making sense, but there was so much Macon needed to know. I think she may have made a choice in her heart without realizing it.
She didn't.
Macon dismissed me.
It was the Book of Moons, Mr. Ravenwood.
Liv couldn't help herself.
Lena was desperate to save Ethan, and she used the book. It made a trade, your life for his. Lena had no way of knowing what would happen. The book can't be properly controlled, which is why it's not meant to be kept in caster hands.
Liv sounded even more like a caster librarian than usual. Macon tilted his head slightly.
I see. Olivia?
Yes, sir?
With all due respect, we've no time for a keeper. This day will require certain actions best left unkept. At the very least, untold. Do you understand?
Liv nodded. Her expression said she understood more than he knew.
She's not a keeper. Not anymore.
Liv had saved his life and destroyed her own in the process. She deserved Macon's respect, at the very least.
Not likely after this, she sighed.
I listened to the waves crashing, wishing they could carry my thoughts out to sea with them.
Everything's changed.
Macon's eyes flickered again to Liv, then returned to me.
Nothing's changed. Nothing important. It could, but it hasn't yet.
Link cleared his throat.
But what can we do? I mean, look at us.
Link paused.
They've got a whole army of incubuses and who knows what else down there.
Macon took stock of us.
What do we have? A powerless siren, a renegade keeper, a lost wayward, and you, Mr. Lincoln. A motley but resourceful crew indeed.
Lucille meowed. And yes, you, Ms. Ball. I realized what a train wreck we were, hammered, dirty, and exhausted. Yet somehow you made it this far, and you released me from the arc light, which was no small feat.
Are you saying you think we can take them?
Link had the same look on his face as the one he had when Earl Petty started a fight with the whole Somerville High football team.
I'm saying we don't have time to stand here and chat. As much as I enjoy your fine company, I have more than a few things to take care of, my niece being first and foremost. Macon turned to me. Wayward, show us the way.
Macon took a step toward the mouth of the cave, and his legs collapsed under him. A cloud of dust rose where he fell. I looked at him, sitting in the dirt in his charred dinner jacket. He hadn't recovered from whatever happened in the arc light. I hadn't exactly called in the Marines. We needed a plan B.
June 20th. Army of One. Macon was insistent. He was in no condition to go anywhere, but he knew we didn't have a lot of time, and he was determined to go with us. I didn't argue, because even a weakened Macon Ravenwood was more resourceful than four powerless mortals. I hoped. I knew where we had to go. The moonlight was still pouring through the ceiling of the coastal cave in the distance. By the time Liv and I helped Macon navigate the shoreline leading to the moonlit cave, one painstaking step at a time, he had finished asking me his questions, and I was asking him mine.
Why would Seraphine call up the 17th moon now?
The sooner Lena is claimed, the sooner the Dark Casters will have secured their fate. Lena is growing stronger every day. They know the longer they wait, the more likely she is to make up her own mind. If they know the circumstances surrounding my demise, I imagine they want to take advantage of Lena's vulnerable state. I remembered when Hunting told me that Lena killed Macon. They know. It's of the utmost importance that you tell me everything.
Ridley fell into step alongside Macon.
Ever since Lena's birthday, Seraphine's been summoning power from the Dark Fire to become powerful enough to raise the 17th moon.
You mean that crazy bonfire she started back in the woods?
The way Link said it, I was pretty sure he imagined a trash can burning by the lake at night. Ridley shook her head.
That wasn't the Dark Fire. It was a manifestation, like Seraphine. She created it.
Liv nodded.
Ridley's right. The Dark Fire is the source of all magical power. If casters channel their collective energy back into the source, it becomes exponentially more powerful. A sort of supernatural atomic bomb.
You mean it's gonna blow up?
Link didn't look as sure about hunting down Seraphine now. Ridley rolled her eyes.
It won't blow up, genius, but the Dark Fire can do some serious damage.
I looked up at the full moon and the beam of moonlight creating a direct path into the cavern. The moon wasn't feeding the fire. The power of the Dark Fire was being channeled into the moon. That's how Seraphine called the moon out of time.
Macon was watching Ridley carefully. Why would Lena agree to come here?
I convinced her. Me and this guy John.
Who is John, and how does he fit into all this?
Ridley was biting her purple nails.
He's an incubus. I mean, a hybrid anyway. Part incubus and part caster. And he's really powerful. He was obsessed with the Great Barrier and how everything would be perfect if we got here.
Did this boy know Seraphine would be here?
No. He's a true believer,
thinks the Great Barrier will solve all his problems, like it's some kind of caster utopia. She rolled her eyes. I could see the anger in Macon's eyes. The green reflected his emotions in a way the black never had.
How is it that you and a boy who isn't even a full-blooded incubus were able to talk Lena into something so absurd?
Ridley looked away. It wasn't hard. Lena was in a bad place. I think she believed there was nowhere else for her to go. It was hard to look at the blue-eyed Ridley without wondering how she felt about the dark caster she was only a few days ago.
Even if Lena felt responsible for my death, why would she think she belonged with the two of you, a dark caster and a demon?
Macon didn't say it with spite, but I could tell the words stung Ridley. Lena hates herself and thinks she's going dark. Ridley glanced at me. She wanted to go to a place where she wouldn't hurt anyone. John promised he'd be there for her when no one else would.
I would have been there for her.
My voice echoed off the rock walls surrounding us. Ridley looked right at me. Even if she went dark. It all made sense. Lena was guilt-ridden and tormented, and John was there with all the answers, in ways I couldn't be. I thought about how long he and Lena had been alone together, how many nights, how many dark tunnels. John wasn't a mortal. Her touch wouldn't kill him with its intensity. John and Lena could do anything they wanted, all the things Lena and I could never do. An image crept into my mind, the two of them curled up together in the darkness, the way Liv and I had been in Savannah.
There's something else I had to tell him. Seraphine didn't do this alone. Abraham has been helping her.
Something passed across Macon's face, but I couldn't pin it down.
Abraham. That's no surprise. The visions have changed, too. When I was in them, it seemed like Abraham could see me.
Macon lost his footing, nearly tripping me.
Are you certain?
I nodded.
He said my name.
Macon looked at me the way he had the night of the winter formal, Lena's first dance, as if he felt sorry for me, the things I had to do, the responsibilities that fell to me. He never understood I didn't care. Macon kept talking and I tried to focus.
I had no idea things had progressed so quickly. You must exercise extreme caution, Ethan. If Abraham has established a connection with you, then he can see you as clearly as you can see him.
You mean, outside of the visions? The idea of Abraham watching my every move wasn't a comforting thought.
At this point, I don't have an answer, but until I do, be careful.
I'll get right on that, after we fight an army of incubuses to rescue Lena.
The more we talked about it, the more impossible it felt. Macon whipped around to face Ridley.
Is this boy John involved with Abraham?
I don't know. Abraham's the one who convinced Seraphine she could raise the 17th moon. Ridley looked miserable and exhausted and filthy.
Ridley, I need you to tell me everything you know.
I wasn't that high on the food chain, Uncle Macon. I never even met him. Everything I know came from Seraphine. It was hard to believe Ridley was the same girl who almost convinced my father to jump off a balcony. She looked so sad and broken.
Sir?
Liv's voice was tentative.
Something's been bothering me ever since we met John Breed. We have thousands of Castor and Incubus family trees in the Lunae Libri, hundreds of years of history. How is it that this one person comes along out of nowhere and there's no record of him? Of John Breed, I mean.
I was wondering precisely the same thing. Macon started walking again, leaning heavily to one side. But he's not an incubus.
Not strictly speaking, Liv answered.
He's as strong as one. I kicked at the rocks under my feet.
Whatever. I could take him,
Link shrugged. Ridley fell into step next to us.
He doesn't feed, Uncle Em. I would have seen it.
Interesting. Liv nodded.
Very.
Olivia, if you don't mind, he held out his arm to her. Have there been any cases of hybrids on your side of the Atlantic? Liv slipped her shoulder underneath Macon's arm, taking my place.
Hybrids? I should hope not.
As Liv continued along the rocks with Macon, I lagged behind. I pulled Lena's necklace out of my pocket. I let the charms roll around in my palm, but they were tangled and meaningless without her. The necklace was heavier than I imagined, or maybe it was the weight of my conscience. We stood on a cliff above the entrance to the cave, surveying the scene. The sea cave was huge, formed completely from black volcanic rock. The moon was so low, it looked like it could drop right out of the sky. A pack of incubuses guarded the mouth of the cave as waves crashed on the black rocks in front of them, sending shallow rushes of water across their boots. The moonlight wasn't the only thing attracted to the cave. A host of vexes, swirling black shadows, flowed up from the water and down from the sky. They were cycling through the cave's entrance and the opening in the ceiling, forming some kind of supernatural water wheel. I watched as one vex rose up from the water, a whirling shadow reflected perfectly in the sea below. Macon pointed to their ghostly forms.
Seraphine is using them to fuel the dark fire.
An army. What chance did we have? It was worse than I thought, and the possibility of saving Lena more hopeless. At least we had Macon.
What are we going to do? I'm going to try to help you get inside, but from there, you'll have to find Lena. You are the Wayward, after all.
Help us get inside? Was he joking?
You're making it sound like you aren't going with us.
Macon slid down the rock until he was sitting on the overhang.
That assumption is correct.
I didn't try to hide my anger.
Are you kidding? You said it yourself. You think we're gonna save Lena without you? A siren who's lost her powers, a mortal who never had any, a librarian, and me? Against a pack of blood incubuses and enough vexes to take down the Air Force? Seriously? Tell me you have some kind of a plan.
Macon looked up at the moon.
I am going to help you, but it will be from here. Trust me, Mr. Waite. This is the way it has to be.
I stood there, staring at him. He was serious. He was going to send us in alone.
If that was supposed to be reassuring, it wasn't. There is only one battle that awaits down there, and it doesn't belong to me or to your friends. It's yours, son. You're a Wayward, a mortal with great purpose. You've been fighting as long as I've known you. The self-serving ladies of the DAR, the Disciplinary Committee, the 16th Moon, even your friends. I have no doubt you will find a way.
I had been fighting all year, but it didn't make me feel any better. Mrs. Lincoln might look like she could suck the life right out of you, but she couldn't actually do it. What waited below us was a different story. Macon drew something out of his pocket and pressed it into my hand.
Here, this is all I have, as my recent trip was rather unexpected, and I didn't have time to pack.
I stared down at the small square of gold. It was a miniature book,
held shut with a clasp. I pressed on it, and it sprang open. Inside there was a picture of my mother, the girl from the visions, his Lila Jane. He looked away.